This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is one of America's most outspoken and controversial political satirists, Bill Maher. His HBO series, Real Time, started its new season last Friday, just in time to weigh in on the Democratic Convention. Real Time usually starts with a sketch or song parody. Then Maher talks about the issues of the day with a panel of guests from the worlds of politics, policy, punditry, and entertainment. Maher started his HBO series after the demise of his ABC series, Politically Incorrect. One of Maher's guests on Friday was Michael Moore. They both voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, but this time they're voting for Kerry and trying to convince Nader to withdraw from the ballot. Nader joined them briefly on Friday's show and defended his campaign. Here's a clip from the show.
The important thing here, Bill, is this. The conservatives and liberal Republicans are furious with Bush over the deficit, over the subsidies to corporations from their tax dollars, over the Patriot Act, big government, over the sovereignty shredding WTO and NAFTA. Who's talking to them? You know, the Democrats are so arrogant. Just because tens of millions of voters, just because tens of millions of voters in this country, working people, are against abortion and against gun control, that means they write them off completely. This is ridiculous.
Okay.
We are the underdog candidates.
Look, obviously, we are not convincing you with any of our words, so I'm just going to say, because of all your great service, and because we do really love you, but we disagree with you on this, Michael and I are going to get down on our knees and beg you not to run. Please. 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 Please.
Ralph.
Don't run
for
president. Because you're a great American.
This is an excerpt of Friday night's edition of Real Time with Bill Maher. Bill Maher, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
How did you and Michael Moore decide to get down on your knees and beg Ralph Nader not to run?
I just said to Mike before the show, you know, neither one of us is above begging. you know, I said, Mike, come on, you're not above begging, you're married. Joking, of course. But I said, you know, it's the least we can do for our country. We both feel very strongly about this. We've tried everything else. Everybody has tried everything else. At very least, if he doesn't withdraw from the race, we'll know that we gave it our full measure to try to affect this election. And, you know, having done that, I think I can at least walk through the voting booth on November 2nd with a clear conscience, knowing I tried.
Now, I'd say that the look on his face was a combination of surprise, shock, and terror. How did you read it?
Well, just to get any look on Ralph Nader's face is good. I think he was a little... I think he was okay with that. He was a little more miffed when I gave him the picture of O.J. Simpson and said, this is to remind you that a person can be considered a hero his whole life and then wreck it because of one little thing.
Now, let's see how effective your entreaty was. Ralph Nader has since said that the Democratic Convention made John Kerry sound more like President Bush than ever, and that justifies his staying in the race. And he called the Democrats a decadent party. So I guess goal number one of getting him to withdraw was not fulfilled.
No. But I think we did achieve something I thought that was pretty interesting that could be a wedge on this issue in the future. I asked Ralph, I said, okay, we get it that you don't think that Bush is different enough from John Kerry. What about if he was running against David Duke, former Klansman, somebody who's been in the political realm? And Ralph said, no, in that case, I would vote for John Kerry. So, in other words, it is a matter of degree. Ralph Nader can be moved. He does understand the concept of the lesser of two evils. Apparently, President Bush is just not quite evil enough.
So, to recap, 2000, you voted for Nader. 2004, mm-hmm. You're urging people to not vote for Nader. You're urging Nader to withdraw from the ballot. What impact do you think he's going to actually have on the election this time around?
I wish I could answer that. I had been saying, and because I believed it to be true, of course, that he wouldn't have that big an effect on the election, because I think it's erroneous assumption people make that a third-party candidate is always going to take votes away from somebody. And the analogy I used was television. Very often they'll throw against a very popular television show a new show, And it won't be that the old show loses an audience. It's just that the new show brings in a whole new audience. You know, CSI still gets its 20 million, but How to Marry a Midget, you know, just brings in the midget audience, whatever. And I thought maybe that's the truth with Ralph. And I think that is somewhat the truth with Ralph. But then you look at the polls. Now, Ralph, of course, is saying that the polls don't mean anything, but that's always what politicians say when they're behind in the polls. But it's not worth the risk. So my guess is still that the people who are voting for Nader wouldn't be voting anyway. But even if he just takes, you know, a few hundred, we saw from the last time, that's enough to tip the election. So for those of us who think that the stewardship of the current president has not been effective, we just wish Ralph would play it safe and leave the election a little more pristine this time.
Bill Maher is my guest, and his HBO series, Real Time with Bill Maher, resumed last Friday night and continues through the election. Because of the new terror alert against financial institutions in New York, New Jersey, and Washington, we're seeing pictures now of police with automatic weapons in the street. And, of course, if you live in New York, you're actually seeing the police with the automatic weapons. You're not just seeing the photos. What's your reaction to seeing that?
If I lived in New York, I'd be somewhat assured. Mm-hmm. At least they're on the case. I mean, if there's a problem, let's deal with it. Let's have the cops with the automatic weapons or whatever it takes in the street. Better to deal with the problem as it is than to pretend there isn't a problem.
Have you asked yourself if you worked, say, for Citibank, if you'd be showing up for work?
If I worked for Citibank, I'd never be showing up for work. It would have nothing to do with terrorism.
But seriously, say you worked in one of those places or right next door to one of the places that is a likely target. Do you think you'd go to work?
I think I would. I mean, I think that's the least I can do. I was born at a time when the Vietnam War... I wasn't born then, but I came of age, shall we say, just as the Vietnam War was ending. So there was never any moment in my life when I had to consider, oh, should I join up and go fight the war? Because I think I was 17 in 73 when they stopped the draft and started to pull the troops home. So I got real lucky with that. So I would think the least I could do for my country in the way of showing courage is to show up for work. And I think once they're on to a situation to this degree, it would be very hard for the terrorists to pull this off. I mean, they got us good on September 11th, and they could get us again. But in a situation like this, where they have what seems like specific intel, I would put my lot in with the good guys.
Now, I know you're voting for Kerry, and you're not voting for Nader this time. Do you consider yourself, like, pro-Kerry or just anti-Bush?
Well, I think John Kerry is a fine candidate. There's nothing... People's expectations of a presidential candidate are so silly at this point. I think the Kerry campaign is a good test of our maturity, because the knocks on Kerry, besides the flip-flopper issue, which we got into our show Friday, and I could address here if you'd want me to, but outside of that, it just seems like all the knocks on him are that he's not exciting enough, he's not charismatic enough, and these are not qualities that we should even care about in a president. I don't think if Abraham Lincoln was running today, he'd be particularly good-looking, charismatic. I don't know if he told a great joke. I don't know if he would strike the people as President Bush does, as someone who you'd want to have over for dinner. But that's not what's important. What's important is that the man is a capable leader of the free world. And John Kerry is a very serious guy. I like that quality in him, that he's serious. I don't care if he's funny or likable or witty or...
Did you feel like that's your job and not his job?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a nice added quality in a president. It was wonderful that, you know, John Kennedy spoiled all of us for presidents in the future because he was so charismatic and handsome and witty. But you know what? That was a fluke. Get over it. And it's probably never going to happen again that way. So we should stop electing the president like he's winning American Idol and elect him and choose him for the qualities that are necessary in this dangerous world, which is primarily wisdom and courage.
Do you think that there's too much emphasis on his military record, you know, in the sense that do you feel like in future elections the military record of the candidates will be important, or do you think that there's something special about this election and his record?
I think military service is always extremely important and special. I voted for Dole in 96 because I thought, well, you know what, he's going to lose anyway. And I felt a special attachment because my parents were both in World War II for that generation that fought that war. And I thought, this is the last time I'm going to have to, chance I'm going to have to vote for a World War II veteran. And I just think all things being equal, I've said this before, that all things being equal in two candidates, I think just on past service, you give it to the guy who went to war for his country. That's the biggest, by far, sacrifice that anybody could ever make for their country. And obviously there are situations where one candidate has been to war and he's just not good at politics. You don't elect that guy. But that's not the case with John Kerry. And also, we are in a war. And if we are going to need, quote, a wartime president, then I want a president who's been to war. I think that makes a huge difference in how a president acts. I think when a president has seen war and been to war, he is much less likely to involve his country in a war. And I also think the level of naivete that our current president displays in matters of foreign affairs is something that a veteran would never have, because a veteran has been overseas. A veteran has seen what it's like to conquer a country. Any Vietnam vet knows that one of our biggest problems in Vietnam was that we just didn't understand the people and the culture that we were dealing with. And we're doing the same thing in Iraq. I think if you asked the average Iraqi man on the street, would you rather have Saddam Hussein back in power or have your sister walk down this street in a miniskirt? I think they would overwhelmingly say, I'd rather have Saddam Hussein back in power. And I don't think President Bush gets that.
My guest is political satirist Bill Maher. His HBO series, Real Time, started its new season last Friday. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bill Maher is my guest, and his HBO Friday night series, Real Time with Bill Maher, just resumed this past Friday, and it will continue through the election and then go on a break again. After the Democratic Convention, you said that you were exhausted by the optimism.
Yes, exactly.
What did you find too much about the optimism at the convention?
That it was never ending? That they shoved it down our throat from the first minute to the last? That it's childish even to presume that optimism is, for some reason, the most important quality in a candidate? I tried to make the point on the show Friday that pessimism is actually good, and that the U.S. Constitution is a very pessimistic document. That's why it has all those checks and balances, because they didn't trust each other, and they certainly didn't trust what they would have called the howling masses. It was all about making sure that human nature was checked. And there's something wrong with optimism to a degree, but I'd rather have realism. You know, I feel almost like there's a committee waiting. Are you now, or have you ever been a pessimist?
So what networks did you watch for the convention?
I switched around. I mean, the broadcast networks didn't really put it on. So I was watching probably CNN and MSNBC.
Not Fox, not C-SPAN.
not C-SPAN. I'm not sure where C-SPAN is in my satellite package. I may have saved a few dollars and didn't get C-SPAN. That's right, I got Cinemax instead. But the other networks, even the cable networks, didn't show the full convention. And I was insulted on behalf of the Reverend Al Sharpton the way MSNBC, I don't know, CNN may have done the same thing. No, they didn't, because I think I saw it there. I saw the whole speech on CNN. But MSNBC definitely cut him off. He was building to this incredible moment. It was literally the only political speech that has ever brought me to tears. And the next day I found out that right in the middle of it, as he's going, you know, for the home run swing at the end of his speech, MSNBC, "All right, we're watching the Reverend Al Sharpton," and I have to say, this man started out his career with a lie. And, you know, it's just like the unbelievable narcissism of the media. Yeah, we're watching. In other words, you're watching me and I'm watching him, but what's important is that you're watching me. So you're right, I should have been watching C-SPAN.
You wrote a very funny editorial about this for the LA Times and also talked about it on your show. When you said, would you say that the speeches, that the conventions were just taking away time from the network's real goal in life, which is covering the Lacey Peterson trial?
Yes, right. Yes, I took the position, I guess it's a contrary one, that the conventions are actually important and that they deserve to be not just broadcast, but viewed in their entirety. It's one of the few times during the election cycle when the race is not reduced to just sound bites and attack ads. Now, conventions aren't perfect, but at least it's a way that the major figures in a party can speak in an uninterrupted fashion, in a serious fashion, and people can hear what they have to say. And the parties are different this year. They do have different platforms and visions of America. So is it so awful for Americans to take a few nights out of their year to look at the party and then the other party, see who they consider their important faces, see what they consider their important themes, and hear what their vision is for their country, for your country? It is your country. As opposed to what? Watching some awful reruns that the networks are burning off during the summer?
Bill, what do you think of the music at the Democratic Convention?
Well, I'm a big Chaka Khan fan, so, you know, I'm a Republican Party convention music fan because they always have, I think, a lot more soulful music because they're attempting to persuade people that there are more than five black people in the Republican Party. So they've always got a great R&B lineup. The Democrats, of course, are trying to appeal to the heartland. So they try to put on people who are, you know, quite frankly, a little too white bread for my taste.
What are you looking forward to? What are your expectations of the Republican convention?
Well, I think the Republican convention has a lot of work to do to accomplish its goal, which is to once again fool the American people into thinking that it's a party of moderates. That's why they're putting up people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rudy Giuliani, who are not really emblematic of that party. Now, the Republican Party always likes to say it has a big tent, but whenever I've been under that big tent, the people serving the hors d'oeuvres were always black and brown. I'm just saying. but at their conventions, Schwarzenegger, you know, Giuliani, all their, you know, the few people who they have in their party who are a little more sensible about social issues, they seem to have a prominent role. You seem to see an awful lot of ethnic faces. And, you know, President Bush ran in 2000 as a compassionate conservative and as a moderate. And now after 4 years, obviously he can't hide the record that he didn't govern that way. So it's a much taller order this time trying to convince people. But, of course, as I've said before, the genius of our marketing combined with the stupidity of our people is the true axis of evil.
I want to ask you a language question. Now, you're on HBO where you can say anything. And do. Two big language controversies in politics recently. Teresa Hines Carey told a reporter to shove it. And Vice President Dick Cheney told, was it a congressman or a senator?
Pat Leahy.
That's right. It was Senator Pat Leahy. And Vice President Cheney told him to blank himself.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I want to hear this. I want to hear you say it.
Some other time. So did the fact that Vice President Cheney used the expletive and told Pat Leahy to blank himself, or that Teresa Hines told a reporter to shove it, register on you in any way?
It certainly doesn't bother me. I think you have to look a little bit deeper than those two comments. First of all, just by virtue of the fact that you can quote Theresa Heinz Kerry's comment and you can't quote the vice president's should tell you that there's a little difference in who's the meaner. Also, to tell a reporter who, in her view, I haven't really looked into it, but apparently, in her view anyway, he made stuff up about her. I mean, come on, what's the big deal about telling a reporter to shove it if they lied about you? That's the least you can do. That's a lot different than talking in a much more tawdry way to a U.S. senator. This wasn't some low-life reporter working for that Richard Mellon Scaife scoundrel. This was Senator Pat Leahy. And on the Senate floor, I understand, which has always been a place of courtesy. And it's pretty funny because this is the crowd that was going to come into office and restore civility, remember, and honor and integrity and all that kind of stuff. I mean, having said that, it's about the thousandth thing on my list to have against Dick Cheney. I mean, I could think of so many other things that he has done while in office that bother me more. But it just, I think, is very indicative of the nature of these people.
Bill Maher, his HBO series Real Time started its new season last Friday and continues Friday nights through the election. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with political satirist Bill Maher. His HBO series Real Time with Bill Maher started its new season last Friday. Bill Maher, you live in Los Angeles, so you know you're in the Hollywood area. Hollywood is has been called by many conservatives, you know, a kind of elite, liberal bastion. Of course, Governor Schwarzenegger.
That's what I like about it.
So, as a comic and satirist who lives in Los Angeles, has her own TV show, you know, is voting for Kerry, you know, doesn't like Bush. What are your impressions of Hollywood as a liberal bastion? Do you think that that's true? Do you think that you are typical?
Well, Hollywood is a liberal bastion only on the surface. They are truly limousine liberals. They're the people who are giving money to the candidates and so forth. They're rich, okay? And rich people tend to be conservative. And they're a lot more conservative here in many ways than you would think. Yes, they, of course, are liberal on social issues. They want abortion to remain legal. They want to be able to have gay marriages and stuff like that. But rich people really also would like the stock market to be stable. And even though they cry a lot about how President Bush gave a tax cut to the rich, you know, I think secretly they're kind of happy he did that.
So you don't think Hollywood's as liberal as advertised?
No, I don't.
Now, your show, Politically Incorrect, kind of created a trend of programs in which comics and actors sat around and talked about politics.
Yeah, I think it's funny now that so many other people are doing it, and I've left it.
why have you left it, and do you feel like you created a monster?
I do, and I feel bad about it, and I should feel bad about it. It is a bit of a monster. Just the idea that all sorts of celebrities have this sort of half-life, that they can go on and opine about various matters. And even reality television is a lot about that. It's about celebrities who are still famous in people's minds. They still go, oh, wow, Adam West, you know, William Shatner, it's good to see him again. How can we use them? How can we use people that the public doesn't see anymore but kind of gets a smile from seeing once again? And so in some ways it's okay. I personally felt like we outgrew that method of entertaining the American audience, which is not to say that, you know, I quit Politically Incorrect because I was tired of it. I plainly was fired because of something I said. But it did come at a good time because I kind of felt like that era and that phase of my career was drawing to a close. I was not as interested anymore in talking to intellectually shallow celebrities about important issues and having to paper over the fact that they didn't know what they were talking about half the time. It was charming, I think, for a while. It was kind of new and funny. Oh, look at that. He doesn't know, and the other guy's a real heavyweight, and here it is, our democracy, and we can see them in action together. But after a while, I was enjoying it less. I never enjoyed Politically Incorrect so much as the last 9 months after 9/11, when everyone in entertainment field kind of had to get serious for a while. And we got more serious. We didn't start the show with a monologue. We just had the panel there. And the panel was almost always after that much more serious people. We had a lot of Muslim Americans on to explain their side of it. And we sort of dispensed with that, silly, Pauly Shore kind of guest. And I love Pauly, but, he doesn't belong there talking about important issues.
So what's your criteria for guests now?
Now it's a whole different ballgame. They have to know what they're talking about. They have to be involved in a serious way. Like the show we had Friday, Michael Moore, obviously there's a guy who takes it seriously. Kim Campbell, the former Prime Minister of Canada, and a sitting congressman, Representative David Dreyer. And these are all serious people who can address whatever issue comes up. In the old show, we had to always have meetings where we would go, okay, now I'd like to talk about the situation in Israel, but we have Pam Anderson on the show this week, and really the only issue that she wants to talk about or would be good on is animal rights. So, we're going to have to do Israel on Wednesday because... So, we don't have to do that anymore. I can talk. I never have that meeting at all. We never even discuss it. I talk about what I want to talk about, what went on that week and what's important, and everybody on the panel, it is just assumed, can talk about whatever issue comes up, and they can.
Do you think that comics and political satirists like yourself, Jon Stewart, Colin Quinn, Al Franken, are going to have an impact on the election?
Yes, I do, because as has been widely reported, a good deal of Americans, especially younger Americans, get their information from these shows, especially the other fellows you mentioned who are on every night. And they've become a habit to people, and people love those shows, and they go by what they hear on those shows. So the point of view, to the degree that those shows bring a point of view, is the one that people adapt, because people are looking for an opinion.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing that people are getting their opinions from comics and satirists?
Because people form opinions based on not enough information to really have an opinion. They want to have an opinion, they just don't want to do the work that it takes to have an opinion. So they will adopt the Leno opinion or the Jon Stewart opinion, and or what they perceive as the opinion there. And that sort of is an incestuous situation, because I think the comics take their opinion from what they perceive to be the public opinion. So I don't know if we ever really look beyond very surface impressions of an issue. If John Kerry if you can get a laugh portraying John Kerry as a flip-flopper, that's as deep as it goes, and then that's all that's important. He's a flip-flopper, and there we get our joke. And then the public, that's just what they believe. They have that opinion. Okay, John Kerry's a flip-flopper. That's one thing I know about politics. How do I know that? Well, they're always making jokes about it, and everybody's always laughing. It's got to be true. Whereas, is it really true? I don't know.
As a comic yourself, how do you feel when, Al Gore goes on Saturday Night Live or John McCain? Do you think that's a good thing in that, it kind of humanizes the candidate or the politician and shows us another side of who they are? Or do you think that that should be safe for the actors?
Yes, I think it's terrible. I think it's, again, they're contributing to the problem. And the problem is that people don't vote a candidate into office for the right reasons. The right reasons would be, is he brave? Is he strong? Is he wise? Okay, that's not what they care about. They care about, how does he feel about me. What's he like? It's not what does he think, it's what does he feel. It's almost like in the Olympics, you know, they used to just show the athletics, and now we always have to have a sort of a frosted lens backstory so that we know who to root for. Oh, root for the runner from Kenya whose sister has multiple sclerosis. You know, it's like that's not really what this is about or what's important. And so when these guys go on shows like that, it doesn't make me like them more. It makes me like them less because they're pandering at a level that does not increase the motivation for the voters to consider what's really important about a guy.
So, Bill, who's on your show this Friday?
Terry, I'm glad you asked me that. I have it right in front of me. It's Steve Harvey. Love Steve Harvey. Former Representative Bob Barr. I think we all remember him from impeachment. And movie star Tim Robbins.
Wait, now Steve Harvey's a comic, right?
Steve, yes.
Didn't you just tell me
Steve Harvey is a very popular African-American comic and radio host.
But didn't you just tell me you didn't like so much talking to entertainment people?
If they're stupid.
And Tim Robbins is an actor.
I promise you, these guys know what's going on.
Okay.
I wouldn't book them if they didn't, yes. I mean, all those years that we did Politically Incorrect, we kept files, many of them in my own little mind, about who knew what was up and who didn't. Yes. I mean, Tim Robbins, I think, is rather well known for being an activist.
Yes. And you're going to do a sketch at the beginning or a song?
We always do a little...
Not like
a little
your
song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants. We always do what we call a cold open. Yes, something a little amusing, little sketch play.
Did you ever want to act? Did you ever think about that?
Well, darling, I actually was an actor for many years and was in.
Funny, I didn't see you in anything.
Well, you probably did, and you probably don't remember.
Oh, what were you in?
I had four television series.
As an actor?
This is in the 80s. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, what shows?
My first series was called Sarah with Gina Davis and Bronson Pinchot and Alfre Woodard. I did a series called Hard Knocks. I did one called Charlie Hoover. I was always in episodic television, you know, Murder, She Wrote and Max Headrooms and whatever the shows were at the time. Movies never won that was like a huge hit, but that's how. I mean, I came out to California in 1983 and I started Politically Incorrect in 1993, but most of the time in between that 80s, early 90s era, I was a comedian and an actor. I mean, that's how I made my living.
Would you go back to acting?
Never. A few years ago, somebody asked me if I would do one day on a picture. And I thought, well, I haven't done this in a long time. Why don't I do this just to see if it's any fun like I used to think it was fun? And it was a nightmare. It was, too many hours, too much makeup caked onto my face, too early in the morning. And as was my wont when I was an actor, the movie was horrible. I never seemed to be able to get into a project that was any good at the... I mean, that you wouldn't even want to walk out of the theater. So I think I've resigned that. And also, I think my nature is completely opposite of what the acting nature is. The actor is always trying to put on an illusion and conceal the truth or build an alternate truth, whereas really my nature is the exact opposite. I'm always trying to just say exactly what is the truth as I see it.
Right, you want to say exactly what you think.
Yeah.
Well, Bill Maher, thank you so much for talking.
Without getting fired.
Well, too late for that, huh?
Knock wood this time.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Pleasure always, Terry. Thank you.
Bill Maher's HBO series Real Time started its new season last Friday and continues Friday nights through the election.